hair, but the eyes, the shape of the mouth, the line of the chin, she'd passed down to her daughter.
Lieutenant Dallas! Detective Peabody!
Brooklyn rang in her cheerful voice.
I recognized you!
She grabbed Eve's hand to shake, used it to pull her inside while she gestured Peabody in.
I've seen the iCOVID 3 times. I'm really rooting for it next month.
Next month?
The Oscars! You're going, aren't you? I hope you're going.
What an experience.
And listen to me, blathering on when you must be here to see Blaine. I talked her into going upstairs to her office to write. Take her mind off things. She's so upset about that poor girl. Come in, sit. I've got the fire on. Spring can't come soon enough.
She led them out of the wide foyer with its vase of fragrant lilies on a glossy table, its big oval mirror and pretty girly chairs into a spacious living area where a fire snapped in a hearth of dark gray brick flanked by tall white cabinets. On the mantel over the hearth stood more flowers, candles, and a large painting of what Eve thought might be tulips. Lacy curtains fussed at the windows that let winter light slide inside in frilly patterns. Soft throws draped artistically over the backs of facing sofas, while the pillows Eve assumed women loved simply because lined the seats.
Let me take your coats, and you make yourselves at home while I get Blaine.
Thanks. We'd like to speak with you too, Mrs. Delano.
Audrey, please.
And I'll confess, I'd be thrilled to be interviewed by Dallas and Peabody. I know it's a terrible situation, but if there's a silver lining, you should find it. I'll go get Blaine.
She carted off the coats, steps brisk in her house skids. This was a really nice house, Peabody commented as she wandered around. I really like this room. It's girly, but it's comfortable girly.
She sat in one of the occasional chairs, snugged her butt in.
Really comfortable. And it smells really good.
Eve scanned the photos on the cabinet shelves. Family shots. Generational. Baby pictures, little girls, young women, mothers and daughters. Some men sprinkled in. One of Audrey, Blaine, and 2 teenage girls. Heather and Piper, Eve remembered. Photos, some books, lots of pretty, useless things. She turned when she heard footsteps. Delano had changed since her morning visit to Central and now wore baggy gray pants, a hip-length blue sweater with a kangaroo pocket, and house booties designed to keep the feet warm.
I didn't expect to hear from you so soon, she began, or see you. I hope it means you've broken the case, or that, at least, found some way I can help.
We have some angles. My mother said you wanted to speak with her as well. She's excited about that.
Delano let out a short laugh, sat on one of the sofas.
She's followed your work closely since Nadine's book. She's just getting coffee. She likes to fuss, as we don't get many visitors during the work week. At least not until the girls, and often some of their friends, charge in from school.
How soon will that be?
The coffee?
Your daughters. When do you expect them home?
Oh, I... She looked at her wrist, laughed. No wrist unit. I don't pay attention to the time when I'm working. What time is it?
3:10, Peabody told her.
Really?
I lose track.
Shortly, then. If you want them out of the way, I can just... Actually, we'd like to speak with them. With all of you.
Oh.
A worry line dug in between her eyebrows. I haven't spoken to them yet about any of this. They've been in school. If you'd like time for that, we can wait.
No,
Delano said more firmly. They're tough, and they're sensible. We can explain it all to them together.
Just, can you tell me, Should I be concerned for their safety? I don't think there's any cause to be overly concerned at this time, but we'll talk about that. Audrey carried in a loaded tray. Peabody jumped up to take it.
Let me help you.
I'm strong as an ox, but you're a good girl. Just on the table there. Sweetie, the girls will be home in a few minutes. Do you want me to steer them off?
The lieutenant wants to talk to them, too. Mother and daughter exchanged a look. Audrey sat, patted Delano's knee.
Well, we're in this and everything else together.
Delano tipped her head to her mother's shoulder. Always. 8. Audrey gave her daughter a quick pat on the leg, then shifted to pour the coffee.
2 black. That's Lieutenant Dallas and me. 2 coffee regulars for Detective Peabody and Blaine. And I hope you'll try my sugar and spice cookies. They're a favorite around here.
After she passed around coffee and cookies, Audrey sat back.
Now, what do you need from us?
Peabody, photos.
I'd like you to look at the photos, Eve told them.
Mother and daughter huddled together, studied the photos.
The same person? Delano asked.
Brother and sister?
It's hard to see much of either face.
Same person, Eve confirmed. And at this time, the prime suspect in Chanel Ryland's murder.
You can't see the eyes, Delano murmured, or the features very clearly. Still, I think if this was someone I knew well, it would click. But it doesn't, I'm sorry.
It's a woman, isn't it? At first glance, well, even at a second good look, you assume this one here is a man. But when you see them together like this,
you're looking for a woman?
We believe the unsub is female, Eve said, and presents herself as the character in the specific murder scene, as written. A woman for the first, a man in this case. This individual clearly selected, studied, and stalked both victims. Very likely selected them from others considered and settled on them because they best represented the victims in the books.
It's more about the books, that's what you're saying, than about the women who were killed.
It's more about the books, Eve agreed, which means it's more about you. Eve heard the voices, female, the clatter of footsteps coming from the back of the house.
The girls.
Delano squeezed her mother's hand, got to her feet as the voices, obviously in the heated rush of an argument, ebbed and flowed. Delano walked to the foyer.
Heather, Piper, Grand and I are in the living room.
The voices continued.
I so did not give Brady Mishner the sexy eyes. You so did, with the hair flip combo. Cut it out.
Brady, Brady,
kissy noises followed.
You're such a wheeze, Piper.
Sounds of a scuffle followed. 2 voices, as one, whined, Mom!
Girls, we have company. Pretend to be civilized.
As the girls stepped up, Delano hooked an arm around each of their necks, a kind of affectionate double headlock, and drew them into the room. The one on the right topped her mother's height by about an inch, had a long mane of dark blonde hair with a couple of bright blue braids worked through it. Startlingly pretty, she wore skinny pants that swirled with color, a sweater that matched the braids, and may or may not have given some boy named Brady the sexy eye hair flip combo. The one on the left had the look of a clever, potentially devious elf. The top of her head came to her mother's cheekbone, and she studied Eve out of long green eyes that tipped up at the corners. She wore her brown, streaked with pink hair, pixie short, and had on baggies with a sweatshirt that claimed, Girls Rock and Rule, on a compact frame. She may or may not have been a wheeze.
I know who you are, Pepper said, and looked up at her mother. Who got killed? No one you know. Lieutenant Dallas, Detective Peabody, my daughters, Heather and Piper. Sit down, girls. They sat on the sofa. Immediately went from squabbling siblings to a unit. All four females ranged themselves together. I went to see the lieutenant and the detective this morning because a woman was killed last night. She was stabbed with an ice pick while watching a vid in a theater in Times Square. Like in your book, Piper said, those odd elf eyes direct on Eve's face. Yes. And there was a murder last month of a licensed companion, and it was like one of my books. That's awful. Heather snuggled closer to her mother. Mom, that's awful. It's sick plagiarism. Piper! Heather shot out an elbow, slickly evaded by its target. It's not a joke. I'm not joking. Somebody's copying Mom's books to kill people. Sick plagiarism. Do you have a suspect? Does the kid ever blink? Eve wondered. I'm here to ask the questions. Has anyone approached either of you asking questions about your mother or her work? Just the usual. Heather took the lead. Sometimes one of the teachers or one of the other parents asks when a new book's coming out, or they want us to ask Mom to come talk to a class or their group. She doesn't much do that. Because she's working, Piper piped up. And some people just don't get it.
Closed ranks, Eve observed. Girls rock and rule.
Have you noticed anyone around the neighborhood you felt didn't belong? The sisters looked at each other, shook their heads.
Peabody.
Peabody pulled out the photos again.
Have you seen this person?
You can't see the faces, really. Are they the suspects? Heather asked. Not they, Piper corrected. Her. I've seen her.
Don't make things up, elbow jab.
I'm not,
returned Jab. She was wearing those dopey goggles and the lame-o hat from the other picture. And that coat, the goofy one. Piper closed those eerie eyes.
She had a scarf, too, but not the one in the picture. I think it was black and white, I think.
Where did you see her?
It was before Christmas. Remember we went on the stocking stuffer hunt, then had dinner at Angelo's?
We walked. She shifted to look directly at Eve. The shops are only a few blocks away, and with the stocking stuffer hunt, everything's small, so no prob with big heavy bags. And we kind of spread it out so everybody doesn't see what everybody else is buying. I saw her in City Kitchen when I was buying those spice bags for Grand, and I found those sugar spoons, too, for Mom's coffee.
Did she approach you? Eve demanded.
Nuh-uh. Then we went into... At Your Leisure, and I got Heather those frilly socks, and I spotted Mom going gooey over this robe with blue checks, but she didn't buy it, so I told Heather and we went back and bought it for her for Christmas.
Piper looked up at her mother.
That was a good surprise.
It was a really good surprise. Anyway, she, the woman in the goofy coat, was poking around in there, too. I didn't pay much attention because a lot of people were shopping like we were.
It was like 2 months ago, Heather began. You can't be sure you remember, especially since you can hardly see anything in these pictures.
I see what I see. Piper gave her sister,
yeah, that could be termed a sexy eye, and mimed a hair flip.
She earned an elbow jab, but it was half-hearted, and Heather snickered with it.
Do you remember the date? Eve asked.
It would have been the Saturday before Christmas, Blaine supplied. We always bake cookies in the morning and afternoon, then do the shopping hunt, end the day with pizza at Angelo's.
You and Gran split a bottle of wine, Piper added, and got giggly on the walk home.
Our family elephant, Audrey commented. She never forgets.
Have you seen her since?
I don't think so. The goggles are mega lame-o, so I'd remember them. Britta Gleason has a pair almost like them, and she gets pissy when I tell her they make her look goon. Piper!
Sorry.
She hunched her shoulders at her grandmother's rebuke. She gets annoyed when I tell her she looks goon.
She does look goon, Heather agreed. Piper does notice things.
I observe. I'm going to be a writer like Mom, so I observe. She had a shopping bag. She had a shopping bag from Artie's. We were in there, too, so that's three places we were, she was,
that I noticed.
Is she going to try to hurt Mom?
Heather, sweetie, Delano cuddled her daughter close. Of course not.
I'm going to be straight. You've got good security. Use it.
You've got good eyes, Eve said to Piper. Keep using them.
If you see this person again, do not approach. Don't screw around. Contact the police, local, then me.
You don't think she'd go after my children?
I think this woman has an unhealthy obsession with you and your books. I think through that obsession, she's killed two people, and I'm damn sure she plans to follow that up by recreating the scene from your next book. She's focused on the scenes, the characters, but she's been close enough for your daughters to identify her as trailing you through local shops.
Should I keep them home from school?
Eve dampened Piper's instant grin with a headshake. Not necessarily. How do they get to and from school?
It's walking distance. In bad weather, we have a carpool system.
Talk to the carpool participants. Talk to the school. They should be aware.
I'm going to speak to your local police, request regular drive-bys, and make sure they're aware of the situation.
Use common sense. Don't let anyone into the house you don't know. If somebody comes to the door saying you've got a gas leak, verify with the gas company. If somebody claims they've had an accident or uses any ploy to try to get you to open the door, it's 911.
I've reached third cup in Taekwondo.
Eve gave Piper a respectful nod. Blue belt, red tag. Nice.
I'm fifth dan. Currently studying with a grandmaster, and I'm telling you, don't screw around.
She won't. The steel in Audrey's voice resonated. None of us will.
Good. Peabody, cards.
Rising, Peabody took out contact cards, handed them out.
It's good you know how to defend yourself, she said to Piper,
and your family.
Contacting the police is another form of defense.
I got it.
Heather's fast, really fast. She's lettered in track and field and cross country. Running's a defense, too.
That's exactly right.
We'll stick together, right, Mom? Right, Gran?
Heather took her mother's hand, her sister's.
It's what we do.
Meanwhile, I want your fan mail as soon as possible.
Oh, I've got that for you.
Audrey stood up.
I've got all the email on a disk. Most comes that way. But I made copies of everything else. I'll get it for you now.
Outside, Peabody glanced back at the house as they walked to the car.
It's a solid family. Serious girl power.
Not a pushover among them. Contact local PSD. Walk them through it. We'll go show the photos through these shops the kids talked about. Not much chance anybody's going to remember like she did, but we could hit a streak of luck. Eve got behind the wheel. That's not the household of a woman who let herself be bullied, let herself be subjugated.
I guess sometimes it takes a punch in the face to shake out the inner strength.
I guess it does. After the shops, I'm going to dump you at Central. You can take the photos to Yancey, though I don't know what even the genius of police artists can do with them.
There's no point in you going all the way to Queens to interview Jefferson, and I'll work at home after that. They not only didn't have a streak of luck, they didn't manage so much as a sputter, and no store security that kept the feed longer than 48 hours. As traffic thickened on the drive back to Manhattan, Eve braced herself for a long, ugly slog to Queens. She passed the disc from Audrey to Peabody, ordered her partner to copy and send to her home unit, and started the slog. Blasting ad blimps, farting maxi buses, a bike messenger with an obvious death wish, cross streets clogged with delivery vans, crosswalks clogged with pedestrians who appeared oblivious to the meaning of walk, don't walk signals, cabs, cars, blaring horns, and an underlying rumble of simmering anger slapped together to form New York at rush hour. Though why some idiot termed it rush hour when it was crawl hour, Eve would never know. A waste of time talking to Craig Jefferson. She knew it in her bones, but it had to be done. And though she was tempted to wait, to just go home to the quiet, and come up with a ploy to get him into Central the next day, she wanted to see him at home. She wanted to observe his dynamic with his wife. She soothed herself with coffee from the Indash AC and finished the slog. Another decent neighborhood, she noted. Maybe glossier than Blaine's, but Jefferson's house couldn't boast a corner lot. A newer structure, she noticed. Smaller, but shinier. A two-story painted sleek white with a short one-story leg of nearly all glass. Decent security, she judged. And this time the computer answered her buzz.
Good evening. Please state your name and the purpose of your visit.
Dallas, Lieutenant Eve, NYPSD. She held up her badge for scanning and verification. I need to speak with Craig Jefferson.
One moment, please.
It took more than a moment. Long enough, Eve considered buzzing again. Then the door opened. She recognized Jefferson's wife from her ID shot, just as she recognized the anxious look in her eyes. She wore a dark blue sweater with subtle swirls of silver threads worked through and pants that matched the threading. She'd swept her hair back with some sort of blue and silver clips, maybe to show off the silver studs in her ears. The coordinated outfit, down to the short silver boots with the little navy heels, the carefully made-up face, the perfectly groomed hair made Eve think, camera ready. Or demanding, overbearing husband ready. Mrs. Jefferson.
Yes, I'm Maddie Jefferson. How can I help you?
Lieutenant Dallas, NYPSD. I'd like to speak with Craig Jefferson.
My husband's only just gotten home from work, Maddie began.
That's good timing, isn't it? Can I come in? You're letting in a lot of cold air. Obviously flustered, Maddie stepped back. Eve used the fluster and the space to step in, shut the door at her back. A movement had her glancing up. A boy, Craig Jr., age 8, according to his official records, stood at the top of the stairs, arms folded. Like his mother, he wore a coordinated outfit. In his case, a navy and red striped shirt with a navy sweater vest over it, navy pants. And a glowering expression. Eve hadn't known an 8-year-old could pull off that expert a glower. He must have practiced.
Mummy, he said in affected superior tones. Who's at the door?
Someone to see Papa. You should finish your homework, CJ.
I have finished it.
His snarly tone clearly implied, you idiot.
Papa doesn't like strangers in the house.
I'm a cop, kid. He came down two steps, used his superior elevation to look down his snotty little nose at her.
"Do you have a warrant to enter?"
Eve gave him a hard, thin smile. "Want me to get one?"
"CJ, just wait in your room, please."
The kid barely suffered her a glance and didn't budge.
"If you'll wait here, I'll get my husband."
She hurried off.
"My papa can make you leave. This is his house."
Intimidating kids wasn't her usual course of action, but for this one, she made an exception. She took out her badge again, in a way that shifted her coat and jacket back enough to give the little shithead a glimpse of her weapon. "This is my badge. That means if her father doesn't want to talk to me here, I'll leave, and get a warrant that obliges him to talk to me in my house. That would be Cop Central. I wonder which he'd rather." An angry flush rose up on the boy's face. He fisted his hands at his sides, came down two more steps.
"He doesn't have to do anything he doesn't want. You can't make him. You're just a girl."
"So's more than half the world's population. You're outnumbered." She shifted, looked down the hall as Craig Jefferson strode toward her, wearing a gray business suit and an annoyed expression.
"Just what's this about?" he demanded.
"She called me a bad name," the kid raced to his father, "and she said she was going to stun me with her weapon."
"Seriously?" Eve might have laughed, but Jefferson took a menacing step forward. "If you lay hands on me, sir, I'll have to take you in for an assaulting an officer."
"You threaten my son."
"I didn't know such thing." "Recorder." She tapped her lapel. "Engaged. Would you like me to order a replay?"
"I don't like her. Make her go away."
Ignoring the boy, Eve kept focused on Jefferson. "I expect to take up about 10 minutes of your time here and now. If you refuse to speak to me here and now, I will make arrangements for you to be brought into Cop Central. My questioning there is likely to take longer than 10 minutes. So now or later. Simple or complicated, Mr. Jefferson. It's up to you."
"I demand to know what this is about."
"It involves your ex-wife."
"I should have known."
Disgust echoed through his voice. "CJ, go upstairs."
"I want to stay with you, Papa."
"Upstairs," Jefferson repeated, but patted the top of the boy's head. The kid took two steps, and Eve read his intent in his eyes. She danced back, avoiding an angry kick in the shins. The miss and momentum had the boy skidding back. He'd have fallen on his ass, a moment Eve would have enjoyed, but his father reached out, steadied him.
"Upstairs," Jefferson repeated, adding a light ass swat,
one that Eve interpreted as a congratulatory ass pat. The boy stomped up the steps, pausing only to shoot Eve his middle finger behind his father's back.
"Maddie," Jefferson bellowed, "I left my drink in the den."
Then he turned into the living area. The furnishings coordinated as meticulously as the outfits of the residents, and every inch shined clean and stood ruthlessly organized. Eve imagined if a dust mote tried to sneak in for a visit, it would be eradicated in seconds.
10 minutes.
Jefferson sat in a chair with wide masculine arms. Eve chose the pillow-free sofa.
"What has Blaine done?"
"Ms. Delano's done nothing. However, two people have been killed in the last month. This individual is replicating scenes from Ms. Delano's books." His eyebrows rose, indicating surprise, before he let out a snorting, derisive laugh. "It amuses you, Mr. Jefferson, that two people are dead?" It amuses me that anyone reads that dreck Blaine churns out, and that the police would have any trouble finding the lowbrow reader of second-rate potboilers who'd use their simplistic plots to kill. You must have read them yourself to have such a strong opinion on their content.
I have not. I don't need to read them to know they're dreck.
Maddie hurried in, carrying a lowball glass of amber liquid with a twist of orange on a small tray. Like a skilled waitress, she set a cocktail napkin on the table beside Jefferson, put the glass on it.
Is there anything else I can get you, Craig?
No. This won't take long. When Maddie turned to go, Eve spoke up. Mrs. Jefferson, if you could stay for a moment.
My wife is preparing dinner.
It won't take long, Eve repeated. On a sigh, Jefferson waved at a chair as if giving his wife permission to sit. She did, on the edge of the chair, back straight, knees pressed together, ankles crossed.
Apparently one of Blaine's readers, and I use the term loosely, is copying murders from her books, turning low-rent fiction into reality.
Killing people? Murdering people?
Isn't that what I just said? Jefferson snapped.
What do you expect me to do about it? He asked Eve. You can start by telling me where you were last night between 5 and 7 p.m.
Face flushed as red as his son's had been, that same ugly heat burning in his eyes, Jefferson pushed halfway out of his chair.
You would dare accuse me? Maddie, get my lawyer on the line.
You can do that. Eve held up a hand, watched the woman struggle over who to obey. You're absolutely entitled to that, but it's a simple, straightforward, and routine question. Getting it out of the way saves everyone time.
Let's be clear. I'm not accusing you of anything. I'm establishing your whereabouts so we can move on, and so I can tie this up and leave you to enjoy the rest of your evening.
Craig, I don't have Stan Grotti's contact number.
At his wife's apologetic tone, Jefferson flicked his wrist at her.
I don't like the question, your tone, or your attitude.
I get that a lot, but answering the question gets me out of your hair faster.
I arrived home at 5:20. I unwound from my workday in my den until Maddie served dinner at 6:30. At 7:15, while Maddie cleared and ordered the kitchen and dining room, I spent 30 minutes with my son in the family room. I believe that more than covers it.
It does. Mrs. Jefferson, can you corroborate that?
Yes, of course.
Thank you. Has anyone contacted either of you asking questions about Ms. Delano?
Why would they? Jefferson shot back.
She is the mother of your two oldest children. Blaine lives her life such as it is. We live ours. Could you tell me the last time you had contact with her?
Jefferson shrugged, picked up his drink.
I live my life, he repeated.
Mrs. Jefferson? We sent the girls gifts for Christmas. They sent us thank you notes.
When this earned her a cold stare from her husband, Maddie returned it with a quiet smile.
You said it was fine as long as I paid for them myself.
If you want to throw your professional mother salary away,
he tapped fingers in the air, making air quotes around the term.
The long and short, this is none of our concern. If some moron decides to pattern murders after Blaine's ridiculous excuse for novels, it has nothing to do with me. And if the blowback throws her silly career in the ditch, it was always going to end there. Now, is that all?
I think that covers it. Eve rose.
Thanks for your time.
Maddie will show you out.
When she reached the door, Eve dug out a card, handed it over. In case you remember something. Or have any issues that require police assistance or intervention.
I don't see how I can be of any help to you.
Eve glanced up where the kids sat at the top of the steps, watching, listening. You never know where help might come from. She thought about it on the drive home, concluded she wouldn't hear from Maddie Jefferson. Eventually, she or another badge would end up sitting across from Craig Jefferson Jr. in the box. She knew a violent offender in the making when he tried to kick her in the shins. But for now, she could cross them off her list. No question in her mind, Jefferson loathed his ex-wife, but he also believed her unworthy of his attention. That bled over to his daughters. He didn't think of them, didn't care about them. Whoever murdered Rosie Kent and Chanel Ryland cared a great deal about Blaine Delano. From what Eve could see, the ex-husband made sure he knew no one who cared about his first wife. Too bad, she thought. She'd have gained great satisfaction from making the asshole's life a living hell, even just for a few days. She'd have enjoyed screwing with his regimented life, where he reigned as a god the moment he walked in the door. Since the possibility of that remained slim to zip, she'd just have to settle for catching a killer and making her life a living hell. For a couple of life sentences. Bolstered by that, she drove through the gates of home, saw lights gleaming in the windows and the sweep of outdoor lights illuminating the grounds, tossing the glamour of the house into relief against a moody sky. She thought of Rourke. A man with the money and power to reign as a god if he'd chosen. And she decided he probably did in areas of his business, or at least gave that impression to any who tried to cross him. Inside that castle of a house, no rigid schedules were made or even suggested. No dismissive wrist flicks on either side. Pissy behavior on both sides? Sure, now and then. If he'd wanted a woman who'd have a hot meal on the table at 6:30 sharp, or who scurried to make him some stupid cocktail when he walked in the door, he sure as hell wouldn't have married a cop. She pulled up, got out to leave her car where it sat, and decided if the murky sky had opened up to show even a single lucky star, she'd have thanked it. 9. She walked into an empty foyer, just stood there a moment to breathe it in. Stripping off her coat, she tossed it and the rest of her cold weather gear over the newel post. She looked around, taking stock. She couldn't compare it to Delano's or Jefferson's. It was uniquely Rourke's, and now hers. Full of art and antiques. Rich colors and fabrics, gleaming wood. Lush and plush, rich and privileged, warm and welcoming. And, she was pretty sure, empty except for the cat. She went to the house comp. Where's Rourke? Good evening, darling Eve. Rourke is not currently in residence. Okay. She started upstairs. Intending to head to her office, dig into work. Then detoured to the library. Rourke loved books, and had the space and means to create a small cathedral for them inside his home. Shelves, full of them, lined the walls. And not for looks, though she had to admit they added a distinct style. He read them, enjoyed them. Preferred the weight of a physical book in his hands, she knew, to the same words on a screen. It occurred to her he might have some of Delano's books. Though she hadn't spent much time in the room, big enough to earn the term house in some circles, she knew the books ranged in a kind of order. He had shelves of the classic literature the state school had tried to pump into her brain. She'd been okay with some of it. He owned prose and poetry, plays and philosophies, religious texts, art books, histories, biographies, books on mechanics and mathematics. That would no doubt make her brain bleed. She circled the two-level room, marveling at Rourke's capacity and interest in collecting. Books, weapons, properties, vehicles, clothes. But she knew, with books, whatever he collected, he preferred novels and poetry for pleasure reading. She paused, slipped out the book she'd given him their first Christmas together. Yeats. An old copy, because he valued the old, the history of what lasted. And Yeats, because as a young boy in Dublin, living in hell, he'd found a discarded copy of Yeats, and had taught himself to read from it. So he loved poetry and great literature and, yeah, a good solid murder mystery. Skimming those shelves, she found not just a couple of Delano's books, but several. She pulled out the two that currently applied, added the one she feared would before this was done. She carried them to one of the long, low leather sofas and, what the hell, ordered the fire to light as she hunted through dark falls for the murder of Prior Carradine. The cat found her while she read, jumped up. Galahad started to cozy right in beside her, then froze. Every hair on his pudgy body stood up. He hissed. What? What? His eyes, feral in their light, fired at her before he sniffed her arm. His back arched like a Halloween cat. What the hell? Jesus, the dog? Are you kidding me? It was hours ago. I was wearing my coat. You can't possibly... She sniffed her own arm. I absolutely do not smell like big sloppy dog. Besides, it wasn't my fault. He had the crazy eyes. Galahad snarled, sniffed her leg, let out a bitter, throaty sound. He leaned on me. It was line of duty, so get over it. He turned his back on her, tubby body rigid, angry eyes focused on a wall of books. How come you don't act this way when I come home with blood on me, or street thief stench? She could ignore his jealous ass, she thought, but it was, in its weird way, sort of flattering. So, reaching over, she stroked a hand from his head to his tail, twice. Don't be an asshole. She went back to the book, to the scene. The cat held out for nearly 2 minutes, then curled up against her. Absently, she scratched between his ears as she backtracked to study the plot and tried to put herself in the mind of the killer. Fictional and real. Deciding she needed a more solid sense of the characters, she went back to the beginning, pulled out her notebook, made notes as she read, and wished she'd hunted up the auto chef. There had to be one in here before she'd settled in. Before she'd ended up with a cat sprawled over her lap. A little annoyed, somewhat frustrated, Rourke walked into the foyer. Unlike Eve, or what Eve wouldn't admit even under threat of death, he actually enjoyed being met by Somerset and the cat after a workday. Especially a workday that had been largely a pisser. He'd spent far too much of it untangling a snafu before it could roll into a full-blown clusterfuck, and the fact that he'd eventually tracked the initial mistake back to one of his most valuable and reliable people in R&D only added to it. A tiny miscalculation, really, he thought, as he tossed his coat over Eve's because he just didn't feel like hanging it up. And that tiny miscalculation had led to another and another, building like a bloody snowball rolling downhill. He'd caught it, so stroke of luck there, before it cost serious money or damaging PR. And his valued and reliable mechanical engineer had been so appalled and apologetic, had offered no excuses. Rourke hadn't been able to relieve frustration with a verbal ass-kicking. He considered heading down to the gym, taking Eve's tack and ass-kicking the sparring droid. Maybe Eve was down there too, he thought. Or maybe he could talk her into going a round or two in the dojo and capping it off with sex. There's a room we haven't hit yet, he thought as he went to the house comm. She'd appreciate the thought. Where is Eve? Good evening, Rourke.
Darling, Eve is in the library.
What? Where?
Dallas, Lieutenant Eve, is in the library.
Affirmative, that is her current location. Baffled, fascinated, he wound his way through the house, came to the open doors of one of his favorite rooms. There sat his wife, her boots up on the long bench table, the cat lengthwise across her lap, and a book in her hand. A fire snapped and sizzled cheerfully. The cat snored.
Well, now, this looks cozy.
She looked up, hard, flat cop's eyes clearing slowly. She said,
Hey. And what might you be reading on this cold winter's night?
More reviewing, or studying.
You read Blaine Delano.
I have. He walked over, angling his head to read the titles of the book she'd taken off the shelf. Is she victim or suspect?
Neither. Did you read this one?
She tapped Dark Days.
I haven't as yet. I've been through most of the Hightower series, and they're quite good. I haven't dived into the series with his former partner.
That one. He gestured to the book in her hands. I've read that one. Dark Falls, where she quits the Force.
LC strangulations.
Ah, yes. He flipped back in his mind, dropped down beside her. And God, it did feel marvelous to sit.
Serial killings. A white scarf.
Sash.
Six of one, but yes, sash. And a fancy bow. As I recall, the first victim was a friend, or the sister of a friend of Dark's, and it proved a breaking point for the detective. It also inspired the actual murder of an LC, young and new like in the book, last month. And the Dark Days follow-up? My Vic. Vid Theater, Ice Pick, Hitchcock Vid, Young Actress.
And Delano's not a suspect. She came to me with it this morning. Nadine brought her in. They're friendly. Delano's clean.
So you're pursuing a case of lethal plagiarism.
Funny. That's how her kid put it, more or less. She's got two teenage daughters. Add an asshole ex, who's also unfortunately clear.
I believe I need to catch up, and I'd say we should have some wine.
He rose. I tend toward brandy or whiskey in here, but I think wine. She started to say she'd take coffee, then he distracted her. Just loosening his tie as he walked across the room to a fancy cabinet. Why was that sexy? She wondered. She didn't even get why men insisted on wearing ties, and don't get her started on Jenkinson. But the way Rourke loosened that knot, flipped open a couple buttons on the shirt, it was kicking the guts sexy.
A full-bodied red, I think.
He glanced back, caught her look.
And what's that about?
I spent about 10-15 minutes with the asshole ex before I came home. And it just struck me. You could toss away all your money, then how would we afford this very nice wine?
I mean, without the money, or being so damn pretty, you're everything he's not. He opened the wine, brought it and two glasses back to the sofa. I assume that's a compliment. You can bank on it, Ace. He sat, leaned over, kissed her lightly. Thanks for that, then. And is that where you want to begin? With the asshole ex? It sort of starts there, with Delano in the books. While she talked, he poured the wine, sat back with her. Galahad rearranged his bulk, stretching out so he took up part of both laps. She could have destroyed him, Rourke commented. She's a popular writer. Ad's single mother supporting her two daughters, her own mother. She could have destroyed him by using the media. But she didn't. She built a good life for herself, for her family. They're tight. It's kind of admirable. A lot of, you know, estrogen in the house. It sort of simmers in the air. Simmering estrogen? Rourke sipped his wine. Sounds bloody dangerous. It's plenty girly, but not weak. Too many regard the female circle as weak. He stroked a hand over Eve's hair, much as she'd stroked the cat. To their peril. The killer's female. You have a witness. That's burying the lead, darling. Process, not a wit. She killed the first victim as a woman, killed the second in the guise and mindset of a man. She told him of the security video, moved through to the conversation at the Delano house. The younger kid, Piper, strikes me as scary smart. Not just with the school stuff and math and whatever, just canny. That's one of your words. Is it? It even sounds Irish. Anyway, she makes this woman from the printouts. No hesitation. Describes what she's wearing, and it was 2 months ago. Delano's nervous because the suspect was that close to her family, obviously following them around. But she's not surprised the kid remembers. Apparently she remembers shit. How old is she? 14. Sister's got a couple years on her. But here's the thing, and something I didn't say to any of them. I think, yeah, maybe the kid observes and remembers. But I don't think a 14-year-old girl pays that much attention to some random woman. Not when she's juiced about Christmas, in the shopping mode. You think something about the woman had her paying more attention? Probably subconscious. Just an instinct. She might have seen her otherwise, looking different, but something triggered something. Are you concerned for Delano and her family? Not yet. But she'd fully apprised Brooklyn PSD. 8 books in the series, and she's going to want at least a couple more. She's planning on all of them, but she might snap before 8. Because she worried about that snap, Eve frowned into her wine. Then she'll go for Delano, or one of the kids, the mother, to make her suffer first. I've got Brooklyn keeping an eye on things, and I gave the family the precautions to take. Mira thinks the killer'll turn on what she calls the creator at some point, but not yet. She's having too much fun to eliminate the source. What do you hope to find in the books? Delano's not a cop or a killer, but she has to try to think like one. And she taps a retired cop for some research when she needs to. I've got 3 detectives I know of who say she hits the mark. Add an expert consultant, civilian. Okay. But in a story, there's got to be a trail or a screw-up or some luck, right? It seems to me our killer's real familiar with the books, and she'd avoid that trail, screw-up, try to block the luck. Ah. Understanding her,
Rourke managed to top off their wine glasses without disturbing the snoring lump of cat.
She'll need to do some editing, you could say.
The first's a serial, but she's not going to go after another LC. That's not the point. Did that, move on. In the second, the killer, male, was connected to a competitor of the victim. She won't have a connection.
So you're looking for what not to look for?
Sort of. You've still got to cover the ground. But I have to figure she's copying the book, so she thinks. Doing this led to Killer A's downfall, so I'm going to do this instead. The other thing is, for the first book, the killer's just targeting street-level LCs between 18 and 22 because that's what her husband goes for sideline fucks. Our killer needed to find a more specific type, one that matched the first victim. 18, in her first 2 months in the life, who used a time in-and-out flop.
Writing it's one thing, a blank page. Recreating is more limiting.
Bang. And still, with street-level LCs, it's not hard. You troll around some, you cull out the ones who fit the age bracket. Maybe you take some pictures on the sly, find a way to get info on them. It's going to take a little time, but you're a planner, and planning well takes time. Understanding where she was going, Rourke nodded. The second's more difficult. A young actress with a vid habit, a classic vid habit. The Hitchcock vid. Was it the same vid in the book?
Delano said it was the Bitchcock.
Funny. It's got a ring. It was him. But another vid. Shit. M stands for murder. I need my notes because that's not it. Dial M for murder. That's the one. And the killings during a big scene where the main female character fights off a killer. Grace Kelly. Ray Milan's her husband, who's hired, more blackmailed, someone to strangle his very wealthy wife, while he's at another location, but on the phone, it's mid-20th century, with her.
Solid alibi.
Exactly so. He rings her up, the husband does, to get her on the line. The killer attacks, and she struggles while the husband listens.
Cold.
But she manages to get her hand on the scissors she was using earlier, still on the table, and she kills the killer. And in the theater, everyone's focused on the screen, like with Chanel Ryland's murder. The killer stabs her in the back of the neck, walks out. I haven't read it yet to see where it diverges. Has to be some. I'll take that one. And this? He tapped another book. Dark Deeds, third book. She's already working on it, already selected the Vic. I have to read it. Find out more about the book, Vic, then start looking for potential targets.
Well, then, Rourke picked up the second book. What do you say we settle in for an hour or so? Then we can have our own murder book club over dinner.
Okay, but we're looking for... He patted her hand. I've got it. He put his feet up on the bench table beside hers, opened the book, smiled at his wife.
It's nice.
It's work.
It's nice work.
With the cat spread over both of them like a furry blanket, the fire simmering, their bodies hip to hip on the sofa, she couldn't deny it. She dug into it, into the dynamics between the partners. A good balance and contrast, as far as Eve could tell, with Hightower's more straight arrow leveling out Dark's instinctive moves and gut plays, and vice versa. She reread a section from the victim's point of view, clearly saw the similarities to Rosie Kent. The youth, the recklessness, the inexperience. And both from solid suburban, edging toward conservative backgrounds. The murder itself,
where the author kept the killer's gender neutral. To keep the reader guessing, Eve supposed. The meet when the killer approached Pryor, Rosie, just as the young LC strolled onto the street to